Everything's game to be collected on. And so the idea is own things through your business entities or your trust, asset protection trust, just get the beneficial use and enjoyment out of them. So if you're just starting out, start out LLCs.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm so excited to announce our esteemed guest, Brian Bradley, attorney. Thank you so much, Brian, for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me on. And, you know, it's going to be an important topic. And, you know, like, I'm not anyone's legal guru. And I think we're really living in a fascinating time right now. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of laws and policies drastically change every day and people getting sued and being sued that normally wouldn't be getting sued. So, you know, like the topic we're going to be talking about, you know, protecting your assets, really going to be important now than ever. And I hope that the concepts we talk about and that I break down, though it'll be quick, will really help people up. And I'm definitely going to blow up some of the status quo misconceptions.
Awesome. Well, we're really looking forward to that. So just a little bit of background on Brian Bradley is the senior managing partner at Bradley Legal Corp and is a leading educator and a nationally recognized asset protection attorney for high risk professionals, entrepreneurs, real estate investors, and ultra high net worth families. So let's go into the details of what is asset protection? Why does it matter?
Yeah, it's a great starting point and a great question. And so asset protection is not traditional estate planning. It's really modern estate planning. What we're doing is just placing legal barriers between your assets and any potential creditor or person suing you before it's needed. And that's really the key word is before, you know, like that's it. It's just a barrier, like a safe for your gold or your guns or other valuables, like anything of value. You want to put behind a legal barrier and out of your personal name so it's not easily attached with a lien or reached. So just like the rich, and I love the Tony Robbins saying, you know, like success leaves clues. So the rich don't own things. They don't have them in their personal name. Their businesses and estate plans do. They just get the beneficial use and enjoyment out of them while separating out the liability side of it.
Okay. So I really liked how you broke that down. So for us as real estate investors and people who might be owning multifamily assets, can you give us an idea of like what's potentially at stake? I mean, you touched on it earlier, like there's a lot of people suing each other. Why is it important for us as real estate investors?
Yeah, well, real estate is one of the most heavily litigated areas of law that there is, you know, like, and especially, and it's an easy way to make a lot of money. Like most people are surprised how fast they become, have a million, multi-million dollar real estate portfolio if you, you know, are good at what you're doing. As you get real estate and start adding deals, your liability and exposure and visibility grow and grow and grow. So just think of a red button, a big red button. Every time you have a new deal or a new tenant or you're growing, your big red button is growing with you, which means your liability portion of your life, that percentage is growing with you. So then it's just the odds of probability. You know, like eventually you will get sued. Do you want it to all come down into your personal name and have all of your assets taken from you or not potentially in a judgment? Or do you want to protect all your hard work and your future retirement and legacy? Because I can't stop you from being sued. No one can stop you from being sued. But what we do have control over is how collectible you are. And that just comes down through different tools. Like there's a million ways to skin a cat. You know, so it's just a matter of using different formulas of LLCs, limited partnerships, and asset protection trusts, depending on where you are in the financial sliding scale and your net worth, what you own, where you're resident of, and what you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, such an important topic. So what has changed recently in the legal system? Is there a difference between how you would have done asset protection before as related to now?
Yes, that's another good question. The legal system drastically changed over the last 40 years. Like, it's no longer about justice, you know, but it's more about now redistributing your wealth from the people who are the haves, which are you if you're buying assets and own businesses, to the have-nots. Now, for people who grew up with a more old school mindset where, you know, lawsuits really were never an issue, back about 40 years ago, you could essentially have everything in your own personal name or in a family trust. That was acceptable then. But over the past 40 years, just the litigation landscape has completely changed. And things that didn't happen in the past or that weren't allowed to happen in the past, like contingency fee lawyers, you know, or law firm advertising, they're commonplace. And this created law firms that are just purely sales and profit driven, and just a really a cultural shift of now a predatory legal system that's, like I said, not about justice, but purely profits. And so asset protection is just your modern best bet to level the playing field. And then by using all the different legal tools that we have, what this does is it makes it very hard for creditors to come in and collect on you. And when your planning is then going to be seen as being effective and impenetrable, this then puts you in a lot stronger position at the negotiating table.
Okay, makes sense. So what would you say some basics of asset protection are for? I mean, let's talk about the latter. You know, as you grow, then you need to start adding more layers of asset protection. Can you talk about, you know, where a beginner might start and then, you know, what it looks like as you kind of move up?
Yeah, let's just go through like the basic roadmap. You know, I'll just call it like the key concepts and the tools we use, which are going to be, if you're starting out an LLC, then a mid layer would be a limited partnership, and then an asset protection trust or a bridge trust when you're, you know, become big, rich, and famous. And so I want you and your listeners to think about winter. And when it comes to asset protection, we have different layers. You know, like the first layer is your base layer, and it's going to sit on your skin, and this is going to be an LLC. And then, you know, what you will want after that as you grow is a mid layer, which is usually a little bit thicker. And this is going to be a management company or a limited partnership. And then you want an outer shell waterproof layer. And this is going to keep you nice and dry and warm when the weather gets really bad. You know, this is an asset protection trust, that third layer. But by layering, what you're now doing is making it more flexible. You know, like you can adjust and make yourself more comfortable or warmer or cooler as you start being more active. You want the same thing with your asset protection plan. And so the first layer, you know, asset protection 101, the base layer that most people are familiar with is your LLC. And that's going to be holding your real estate and your risky assets. And so if you're just starting out, I would recommend you at least budget for insurance and an LLC. And so we all know about LLCs, and there's some three big misconceptions and unspoken problems that you need to understand with LLCs. The first problem generally is that most clients have single member LLCs and they're all in your own personal name. The problem here is that courts now have a tendency to fully disregard single member LLCs. And CPAs also tend to set up LLCs as disregarded entities for tax purposes. Now, that's great for taxes, but it's not for lawsuits. What being disregarded means is that the IRS is not taxing your business separate from you. It passes through to you personally. And because of this, they're basically worthless for asset protection and lawsuits and liability issues, because then that comes straight to you. But don't get me wrong, like I still use LLCs, but just as that base layer foundation level protection. What you eventually want is, as you grow and your assets grow and the number of liability LLCs grow, are for your single member LLCs to be owned by what's called a multi-member limited partnership. And so what you're doing with this is layering your protection. You know, your mid-layer limited partnership will be owning all of your LLCs. And so all of those LLC tax filings and K-1s are simply going to passively flow directly through you to a management company. So you'll just have one tax filing. And what you're doing is maintaining legal protection, but then you're disregarding them for tax purposes. And that's creating a very smooth and easy transition for fewer tax returns with that second layer. And then it allows us to come in and add an asset protection trust at that third layer.
Okay. So yeah, there's a lot there. So at what point, I'm not quite sure I understand, at what point would you suggest adding, I mean, I'm sure there's a number of different scenarios, but suggest adding that multi-member LLC?
Yeah. So I would say you come in and add a second layer a limited partnership or management company around 250 to 500,000 net value. Or if you get to around, like, let's say 4 units, Another scenario would be if you're, let's say, a California resident and you really are going into other states and investing in other states because California is very expensive. So if you have one property in Tennessee, one property in Ohio, and one property in, you know, like Delaware, you're going to have three different LLCs. At that point, you don't want to be paying three different tax filings and K-1s. So at that point, it would make sense to then consolidate them under one roof, under one limited partnership. So all those separate K-1s flow into one tax filing. So now you're simplifying your tax filing. You're just paying for one tax filing, not three corporate tax filings. You now have a business, you know, bank account under that management company. You have your ledger under one company versus doing it three times. And then you can exponentially grow that to 15 LLCs if you need to, with still just one tax filing.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So you could get a multi-member, is it called a multi-member LLC?
It's called, no, a multi-member LLC is just an LLC with more than one member.
Okay.
What it is limited partnership. And a limited partnership is completely different from an LLC. And that would could be like a whole nother discussion on why a limited partner at that level versus the LLC. But it's just a matter of it, like where you want to go with that conversation.
Okay. So like just to recap. So if you have like three or four other properties that you own, does it matter if you're an LP or if you own them outright?
You don't want to own anything outright in your own personal name. You'd want your real estate to be owned, not in your own personal name, but in the LLC. What you don't want down the line, at least, is that LLC to be in your own personal name. If you're just starting out, it's going to be that way. There's no reason to then go to a second layer. If you're new, you're just starting to invest, you can adjust that and transfer that LLC out of your name into a management company later on down the line. Mm-hmm. So just starting out, LLC is going to be a single member, is going to be disregarded. That's okay. Have insurance. Then as you grow and scale, you're going to take that LLC out of your personal name and have it owned by a limited partnership, which you'd be the managing member of.
Okay.
And then as you grow again and you get to about a million net, that's when you have an asset protection trust on the limited partnership.
Okay. Got it. So what is the part that, I mean, I'm just, because I'm not maybe totally clear. When you say you're typically like, you know, dropping bombs onto what the commonly held like knowledge is right now, or what people are saying, what is it that is currently being said or done?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Oh, yes. One of the two of the big ones, like we can go into like charging orders for LLCs and anonymity. And so like, that's another second really big issue I see people having is just like with LLCs and a lot of confusion of is where do you even go to set these things up in? Like, do you go to Delaware, Wyoming, Texas, Nevada? You know, like you hear about these states and say like, oh, okay, it's better to go do this. I read it on the internet or something. So I'm just going to go do that. Well, it really just comes down to an issue of just what are you holding and where are you holding it? So let's say, and I'm going to pick on California a lot for these examples. So let's say it's California real estate that you own and you're a California resident and you set up a Wyoming LLC because, like I said, like somebody on the internet told you it was better. And then you go and you hold a key piece of California real estate in it and you're paying California franchise tax on this out-of-state Wyoming LLC. What you've done is actually just convert your Wyoming LLC to a California LLC because you're doing business in the state of California. You're paying California franchise tax. But if you ever have a liability issue in California, meaning you're being sued in California, the judge in California is going to apply California law. They're not going to be bringing Wyoming law to a California state issue and jurisdiction. And this is because a judge in California or any other state, the same principles for any other state, they don't care that your LLC is Wyoming or Delaware registered. You know, what they care is that is doing business in California. It's what's called like legally availed itself of the protections and laws of California. That's the state the asset's in. That's the state the injury and damage occurred in. is going to be that state's laws that are going to apply. This is what's called outside liability. You know, it resulted from that asset, not an internal business dispute. Like I said, like you can't just take Wyoming and Delaware tort and damage laws with you to another state that has no jurisdictional tie to it. So just by simply owning an out-of-state LLC, you have to register that LLC as doing business in another state that you're a resident of. So once you registered in California, if you're a California resident, legally you have to do that. And once you do that, you did that fancy legal word called availed yourself of the privileges and laws of the state and given that state jurisdiction. And this is just through case law, like Indian Palms Country Club Association versus Anchor Bank 2015. This case lays out all of the multiple legal standards that you're going to have to meet to successfully beat a piercing the corporate veil argument, as well as jurisdictional elements. As a real estate owner, because real estate is different, you'll never meet any of these legal standards simply because you have to register that entity in California or the state that you're a resident of. After that, your veil gets pierced. You're now going to be liable for the damages, and all your assets are going to be on the hook as well. And the other big misconception, and I get this phone call a lot, is this really weird, mysterious word called anonymity. And this is the thought that you can just go and create like an anonymous LLC and that you can just completely disappear and ghost a lawsuit. And this is just completely false. But I said, I get this question every day. When your LLC is sued, you're going to be legally required to appear and defend it. Like you have to actually have a personal service of agent. So if you create a Wyoming LLC, and you live in Oregon or California or any other state, you have to have that personal service of agent. Their only job is to say, hey, guess what? You've gotten sued. Here's your lawsuit. You're served. Now go find a lawyer and defend yourself. And so at that point, just the discovery process begins and the legal system itself takes over. And so what's worse is that if you want secrecy to even worse, known as lying under oath, that's the one-way ticket to jail. And so an example of this is that if a creditor is suing you, they have the legal right to demand information about the assets you own. And the courts enforce this very broadly, especially when you're not in like the South with exemption laws. So at this point, the only way to keep your assets anonymous or a secret is to lie about them under oath and commit perjury and say you don't own any. And that's not good. Like I said, that's a one-way ticket to jail. So we don't advocate for hiding assets. We just prefer like full disclosure and have a very strong asset protection plan set up. And then as you grow, eventually have that third layer outer protection shell, a very strong asset protection trust.
Okay. So here's a question. Thanks for laying all of that out, Brian. What would you say when people come to you? Is it because, you know, shit just hit the fan, or is it because they are just trying to do better with their asset protection and they're growing? And if so, like what kind of messes do you find, if any?
No, I get all of it. You know, like I get some people who are the proverbial shits hit the fan. They're so far down the rabbit hole. They've already been served, you know, in litigation. At that point, there's nothing you can do for you. Like you're too far. Like there's a look back period. We would have to exempt that lawsuit, create the planning structure, and then go forward to protect you forward. Then there's people who are just preventative. They know like, hey, I'm investing and I need to protect myself. Like things can happen. And they're just preventative planning. And then you have a good mix of people who their neighbor or somebody got sued and it shell shocks them and say, oh, hey, like, or a business partner of theirs did. And they say like, I have no planning. I just saw my friend or my neighbor go through the ringer and lose everything. That's not going to be me. And so you kind of have those situations. And I think if you think of it like a pie chart, there's the three sections, the things I know, the things I don't know, and the things I know I don't, like, I don't know that I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I know something, I don't need to ask a question. If I don't know something, I can be like, hey, what's the answer to this? I don't know the answer to this. Most people's lives and assets are in the third portion, the things I don't know that I don't know. And that's where the biggest part of loss wipes you out from. So the idea is shrink that part as much as possible. And then at the same time, create the planning structures around. So when those areas of life come your way, you know, you're already protected.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So if a client does come to you, are you like restructuring the way that they own deals, or if they haven't implemented this program yet?
Yeah, most people have their real estate in their own name. We just transfer the title out of their name into an LLC. Or if they have an LLC is already set up, we then transition the LLCs out of their own personal name as the single member managers and to limited partnerships. So it just depends on what stage they come into, but it's always going to be generally they're owning something in their own personal name, which you don't want, and then you just transfer it out.
Yeah. Okay. Because, well, like, say you bought a house using your own personal credit. So, I mean, my understanding was that you couldn't have an LLC purchase it because they needed to underwrite you, the borrower. But then would you say that for people who do currently own it, they can just come to you and you'll put it in a separate, be able to put it into a separate LLC? So will the mortgage then reflect that? Or
yeah, so the mortgage will still, you'll still be, you're not changing the mortgage. The mortgage will still be you, and you're not going to get out of paying your mortgage. That's not what action is about. It's just about
protecting. Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. It's just about protecting you from being sued from a third party. And so generally you would just go, especially starting out, close the deal in your own personal name, and then we'll transfer it out of your personal name, the title, into your LLC. You know, especially for real estate, because risky assets go into LLCs. You're still going to be paying your mortgage. You know, like, this isn't about not paying the mortgage.
No, of course not.
Yeah. And so that would be, and then as you grow, your LLC gets seasoned and multiple, or if you have a managing company, limited partnership, it'll get seasoned. Eventually you'll be able to run businesses and get deals and loans through that. It's just a seasoning phase that you would have to go.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of what I meant. Cause like the bank doesn't necessarily want someone that they haven't underwritten to be owning the property.
Especially not when you're starting out, because you're too young as a company and you're not proven.
Sure.
So then you go through like a 3 or 5 year seasoning phase and you'll see that change.
Got it. Okay. So what other considerations should passive investors, should people who are primarily investing passively as LPs in syndication, what do they need to think about as far as asset protection?
Yeah, that's a great. So you still have liability, maybe not so much to that investment because it's passive, but through your own life or your business that you own. So that's where you can use a limited partnership, because it doesn't have to go that syndication into an LLC. There's no risk or, you know, dangerous risk on that. It doesn't have a key. It's not going to go boom. You don't need insurance on it. That can go directly into the management company itself. And then it'll shield it from your own personal liability or the liability of the managing member of that syndication, because, or if the syndication falls apart or whatever it is, you want to protect your ownership share that you have.
Okay. So I don't think I quite grasped. So where the passive investor who's in, say, multiple deals as a limited partner, what is their first step and when do they need to?
They should transfer their ownership share of that syndication into asset management limited partnership.
Okay.
And that way, that ownership share is protected from their own liability of their life or the other partners of that deal.
Okay. And is there like a point at which you would recommend this? I know you mentioned some stair steps before, like 500,000 or something.
Yeah. Anytime that you own an asset, you should not have it in your own name, because your liability is going to make you on, you know, that's where the damage collection is going to come from. If it's just in your name, everything's game to be collected on. And so the idea is own things through your business entities or your trust, asset protection trust, just get the beneficial use and enjoyment out of them. So if you're just starting out, start out LLCs. Depending on where you are, it depends on what tool we're going to use. So this, you know, like that second layer, the limited partnership would generally come in around 500,000 net. This is about where you see that. And then asset protection trust, generally around 1 million net.
Okay. Cool. Okay. Well, thanks so much for explaining all of that to us. Is there anything that you would add to that about related to the times that we're in? You know, we're still kind of in the pandemic a little bit. Anything about asset protection related to uncertain times such as this?
This is the time when you really need to pay attention to what you have and how you own it, because times are changing. Mm-hmm. And so you need to make sure, like, as you're going down life, like, you, all of your investments are going to be secured from the liability and people trying to get access to them. But in a preventative planning, you know, like, you're going to plan for your death, plan for liability, because estate plans don't protect you from your own personal liability. They come to effect when you die. Mm-hmm. So what happens while you're living? That's what you need to plan
for. Yeah, for sure. Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing just a wealth of knowledge and information on asset protection. Such an important topic for all of us real estate investors and passive investors too. So Brian, would you please share with the listeners how they can get a hold of you and anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah, they can jump on my website, www.btblegal.com. I have it more as an educational platform, so that, like, there's tons of frequently asked questions and videos, legal resources that you can go through in case law to actually go and see. I'd rather have you educated when you do look for somebody, just like shopping around for doctors and other things. Like, have your education and your questions answered so you know when you're being sold a bag of goods or not. And then feel free to reach out to me, Brian, B-R-I-A-N at btblegal.com. I do a 1 hour free consultation. Like, I'd rather you just ask your questions and have an education. Whether you can afford to use me or not, that's not the point. I'd rather just have you have a good source of foundation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's a tremendous offer. Thank you so much, Brian, for putting that out there. And I hope any of you who are interested in the topic will reach out to him. And thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. And such an important topic. Thank you. And we'll see you next time.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.